In ancient Egypt, death, far from being the end, was the beginning of a long and complex voyage. The sarcophagus was the vessel in which King Seti I undertook this journey. The Egyptian underworld was seen very much as a physical space, as part of their cosmology, their picture of the universe. Divided into 12 regions, corresponding to the 12 hours of the night, it was through this space that the dead had to travel. In a sense, it was a bit like a modern video game. There were all manner of obstacles and pitfalls. There were friends to be greeted, foes to be overcome, moving through the zones of the underworld. The sarcophagus was very much more than just protection for the body. It was the vessel in which this journey would be made. Around the surfaces of the sarcophagus, inside and out, are many inscriptions. Among them are speeches of gods and segments of more ancient texts that contained formulas to govern the workings of the universe, such as formula to make the sun rise daily. By the time of Seti I's death, the Book of the Dead, an older guide to the underworld, had been largely superseded by the Book of Gates, scenes from which ornament the sarcophagus. The Book of Gates was a description of the region through which the soul would pass and what would be met there, also containing descriptions of the perils and the friends and foes that would be met. It was an intricate journey in which even architectural features had names and had to be addressed properly. For example, absurdly, a door jamb had the name Accurate Plumbob, and in order to pass through it was necessary to give the correct response. Accurate Plumbob is your name. In fact, it was all a bit of a fix, and the soul always got through. The body had to be preserved for the soul to live on, and in the journey through the underworld, sustenance had to be provided. In more ancient times, this was done literally. Within the tomb, there would be food and drink. But now, by the time of the death of Seti I, over 3,000 years ago, it was believed that images and text could transform themselves into the necessary provisions. So, among the inscriptions, there are pictures as a means of ensuring that certain necessities are taken care of. Food, air, water, means of combating foes. If the sarcophagus is the vessel, the space-time craft to navigate the extra-dimensional space of the underworld, then the inscriptions are the circuitry, the support and navigation systems. Removed from its tomb, the sarcophagus is cast adrift, knocked off course. The passenger had long ago bailed out, having been removed sometime between 900 and 800 BC. Soane's museum is in a sense a time fridge, a suspended animation machine, a frozen instant of a juxtaposition of diverse fragments from other space-times. The preservation is flawed, though. The freezer doesn't quite work. The London air, damp and cool, hastens the decay of the sarcophagus. Its inlaid hieroglyphics, made of sulfate of copper, a blue-green pigment, have melted away, separated in time and space from the hot and arid Nile air. The once white alabaster of the sarcophagus itself has yellowed and browned. Preservation entails new measures. Interned now in its own sarcophagus, a gurney-wheeled glass, as if to wheel it into casualty, life support for the vessel of the dead. Prior to this, in World War II, the sarcophagus was, in a sense, returned to the sands of its origin, filled with sandbags, protection against the possibility of a falling bomb. At ground level, there's an absurdity, looking at the eight wheels. The sarcophagus itself is supported on four stumpy columns, giving it the appearance of an opulent bathtub in a room of relics, or a rotund hippopotamus. The hippopotamus image is apt. During the passage through the underworld, one of the foes to be met was Amit, a creature with the head of a crocodile, the front parts of a lion, and the backside of a hippo. Amit, eater of the dead, ate the hearts of those failing the test of the judgment of the deceased, the weighing of their hearts. More than anything, though, the sarcophagus resembles a boat, being a vessel to carry a dead king on a journey through the river of the underworld. It wasn't just the Egyptians who buried themselves with and in their boats. Looking at the sarcophagus, I was reminded of Queequeg, the Polynesian harpoonist in Moby Dick. Having fallen ill, he asked the ship's carpenter to make him a coffin. For Nantucket whalers themselves, the custom of laying out dead whalemen in small boats is, Melville wrote, not unlike the custom of his own race, who after embalming a dead warrior, stretched him out in his canoe, and so left him to be floated away to the starry archipelagos. For not only do they believe that the stars are isles, but that far beyond all visible horizons, their own mild, uncontinented seas interflow with the blue heavens, and so form the white breakers of the Milky Way. I'm reminded too of another book, Finnegan's Wake. In a sense, the museum represents a microcosm of the book's scope, with its formal curation, neat and tidy. In Finnegan's Wake's pages, words exist as if excavated from the linguistic rubble of the Tower of Babel, crystalline, multifaceted collisions of language and time and space. The book's full of references to burial in boats, in coffin submarines, and to ancient Egypt, also to museums equated with litter, with archaeology, with tombs and cycles of death and rebirth. If the Soane Museum was to be buried now, with all the surrounding artefacts of the early 21st century, it would spark another iteration of archaeology. To stumble across it, thousands of years from now, would anyone know that these objects had once been scattered across former civilizations, pulled together by the gravity of Sir John Soane? In the Soane Museum, among fragments of future civilizations, the sarcophagus finds itself in a new tomb, once a machine for extra-dimensional travel, pulled from its trajectory, is now a fragment among the others. In stipulating that his collection be kept as near as possible to how he left it, neither added to or reduced, Soane created a fridge, a time capsule, a labyrinth in which multiple space-times coexist, stopping abruptly at his death in 1837. In fact, it's not so much a tomb as geological. It's non-linear, like strata rearranged through some extreme seismic catastrophe. Jack Flam, writing in his introduction to the writings of Robert Smithson, wrote this: unusual combinations of the imaginary and the real that seem to evoke the vastness of time itself. This seems like a fitting description of the Soane Museum, and in that sense the sarcophagus is possibly fortunate to have landed up in such a space. Looking into the glass of the sarcophagus's sarcophagus, one sees the radial sun of the skylight reflected, like Ra in his heavenly boat, hovering over the empty ancient vessel. Perhaps the glass is less to protect it from human hands and London's malignant atmosphere, more to keep us out.